As the former British Prime Minister Harold Wilson said, a week is a long time in politics. So if a week is a long time in politics, a weekend can also be a very important time in global diplomacy. Particularly at a time when there is a global war raging, there is also complete turnaround in geostrategic balance of power. Alliances are shifting, battle lines are being redrawn and redefined. At that point, when important people speak out over the weekend, and that's followed by one of the main players today, one of the main combatants or antagonists or protagonists today, depending on which side you are on, also speaks up on Monday morning, you know that it's a very eventful weekend. Now, with the war raging in Ukraine, we know that just now, as I am recording this, Vladimir Putin has spoken out on his May 9 parade, his Victory Day parade. But more importantly, even more importantly than him, over the weekend, two more things have come out. One, the CIA chief, that is William Burns, he's spoken to the Financial Times' Edward Luce, who's a former India hand, is right now in Washington, and he has spoken to him about his impressions on Vladimir Putin and his mind. Yet more important than him is something that the Chinese have done. The Chinese have spoken out, they've spoken out through their vice foreign minister, Li Yusheng. And this is a kind of conversation he has had with 20 chosen global think tanks, as these are called, but you can see the list of participants on my screen. And as you read that list, you can figure out that this is global think tanks as per the Chinese definition of global think tanks. Now, he has spoken out and put forward China's point of view on the state of the world right now, which is very significant. So we will mostly talk about that and look at the other two, that is Vladimir Putin and William Burns, sort of as adjuncts to the larger discussion and argument. But also, you know, our love for sport, particularly non-cricket sport, you know, okay, I admit that we are cricket crazed, but at least I am also equally crazed about many other sports, particularly sports in which India is involved. So I'm not talking about Alcaraz laying low, Nadal and Djokovic on clay courts. That you will read about on the print in a story that Revathi Krishnan is doing for us. But I'll be speaking about, on the one hand, this very disappointing and dismal record of Indian athletics records being so durable. In a competitive athletic environment where your country is improving, your athletes are improving, these track and field records should be broken all the time. But in India, some have survived 30, 40 years. But on the other side of the coin is the good side. Or the other side of the glass is the half full glass. Now it's filling up, which is that some of these old records, very old records, are now being broken. And one of those things happened this week. So I will also mention that in the passing, because that's a rare good news on non-cricketing front in sports for India. Now, what does the Chinese vice foreign minister say? This is a detailed document that is available on China's Ministry of Foreign Affairs website. We've taken it from there. I'm sharing a link with you. You can read the whole thing because it's very interesting. It's so interesting that it's almost as if every line of it is open to interpretation and every line of it is measured and well thought out. And the Chinese system is a bit different from Indian system. Vice foreign minister is not Wang Yi. He's not the foreign minister. But in the Chinese system, even when a junior minister or a mid-level diplomat speaks, they all speak the same language. They all speak from the same 3x5 cards. They don't have personal views. They don't confuse their stuff. Also, they don't talk loosely or they don't hold forth with streams of consciousness. They speak from a script. So they've got Vice Foreign Minister Li Yusheng speak out. Now you might say, I've never heard his name, but I can also ask you, have you heard the names of India's ministers of state for foreign affairs? At least if you ask me, I'll immediately say Meenakshi Lekhi, because she also happens to be my MP, because the place where I live falls under her constituency. But there are two others also, V. Muralidhar and Rajkumar Ranjan Singh. Now the Chinese vice foreign minister, now none of these ministers of state in India will speak for government of India on a larger foreign policy issue, particularly a global foreign policy issue. But in China, it happens, the script is given to something and he speaks. So, Li Yusheng spoke to 20 global think tanks at an event which was organized by a Chinese university. This was an event organized by Chinese Public Diplomacy Association, CPDA, at Renmin University of China, kind of National University of China, Renmin University of China. And this had a panel as he spoke, because first he gave a keynote and there was a discussion. His panel was very interesting. His panel included a former president of Slovenia, the tiny country called Slovenia. So a British politician, Vince Cable, who formerly was Secretary of State for Business, etc., etc., in the Labour government. And if I may just mention it, I'm not being bitchy, I'm just telling you a statement of fact. People keep asking me, which was your most exciting or most interesting walk the talk? Nobody asks me which was your most boring and most challenging walk the talk. So my most boring and most challenging walk the talk was with Vince Cable, because he just wouldn't say anything or just wouldn't exchange. So that has nothing to do with, that doesn't say whether his presence at this discussion was good or bad. I'm just mentioning it to you as an aside. So with this panel and then members of this many think tanks from across the world, I find only one Indian name there. I find some from Malaysia, Kazakhstan, places like that. I think one from University of Cambridge, one from Iran, mostly countries that you will suspect the Chinese or expect the Chinese to sort of, whose groups you would expect them to put on their list of global think tanks. There is one Indian name there, however, I don't know the person. The name is Muhammad Saqib, who is General Secretary of India-China Economic and Cultural Council, ICEC. In fact, I don't know much about that organization as well, which obviously shows my poor GK more than anything else. So this discussion actually has a title. It is Seeking Peace and Promoting Development, an online dialogue of global think tanks of 20 countries. So he begins, Li Yuxing begins by quoting from Xi Jinping's speech and is laying out the agenda called Global Security Initiative. And he says that this vision was sort of unveiled by Xi Jinping at Boao Forum for Asia, which the Chinese had organized. So after the customary invocation of Xi Jinping, he talks philosophically and he says when 2019 was ending, people said it was the worst year of the decade that was ending, but we will probably now have the best year of the decade that's beginning. But that did not turn out to be true, because 2020 is when we know COVID struck the world, and that's where everything went topsy-turvy. So after that philosophical notes, he says also, he starts talking politics in his philosophy. And he says, see what has happened with that pandemic. More than a million Americans are dead. He said people have died all over the world. More than a million Americans are dead. Americans especially, he says. He doesn't use the WHO's numbers to say nearly 5 million, half a crore Indians are dead. He says more than a million Americans are dead. More than 200,000, that is more than 2 lakh American kids have been orphaned. Of course, he would say that the Chinese, nobody has died. If anything, maybe some Chinese have come back alive from the dead, because as WHO has just certified, in the pandemic years, while other countries have been given the number of people per million are supposed to have died, in fact, if you look at the WHO figures, 1710 Indians per million population have died, but in case of China, minus 2 have died, which means not only has nobody died of the pandemic, amazing, made in China virus doesn't kill any Chinese, but it's also brought some people back to life. Nevertheless, on that assurance, he mocks the Americans and he says more than a million Americans are dead, more than 200,000 American kids have been orphaned. Then he gets on to the business part of his speech. He says, quote, that one big power, obviously America, it's now building a new Cold War, rampant hegemonism and power politics. There is a rising tide of division and confrontation, the fragmentation of the world into different blocks and camps, and a fierce information warfare and battle for public opinion. Then he goes on to say, now obviously he's blaming the Americans for this. Then he goes on to say, even worse, is the sanctions, the politics of sanctions. Because he says sanctions hurt all. Sanctions may be directed at one country or the other. And he goes on to say that more than 10,000 sanctions have been imposed on Russians and the Chinese. But sanctions hurt all. Sanctions don't hurt those countries that are targeted with these. Then he says there is a global food, energy, finance and supply chain crisis. All that has been caused by sanctions. Again, you know, who's to blame for sanctions? It's the Americans and their Western allies. Then he says there's a crisis in the world. Because of this, a crisis has emerged in the international political, economic and security order. And he then goes back again and invokes Xi Jinping. And he says Xi Jinping 8 years ago in Shanghai at the summit of an organization called SICA, which is Conference on Interaction and Confidence Building Measures in Asia, of which India is a member too. In fact, you will see on my screen the flags of the nations who are participants in SICA. And he says that is where Xi Jinping had laid out his agenda for common, comprehensive, cooperative security, avoidance of confrontation, alliances and zero-sum approach to politics. Once again, you know, kahin pe nigahe, kahin pe nishana, who is he targeting? He is targeting so far the Americans. Then he praises China. And he says, look at the Chinese role meanwhile. All the crises that you see in the world, Afghanistan, getting a commitment from P5, the five original nuclear weapons powers, to sign up on a statement that nuclear war is bad for everybody, nobody can win it. Then problems in the Middle East, using its influence to bring back JCPOA with Iran so that Iran conforms to JCPOA and those sanctions can go. The Palestinian issue and also in Korean Peninsula. He says the Chinese contribution has been positive. And then he says that our recent summit with the Russians that took place just a couple of weeks before the war happened, that's been misunderstood. In that summit joint statement, he mentions there was a sentence which has been misconstrued. And the sentence he quotes is friendship has no limits on cooperation and has no forbidden areas. He says that somehow has been twisted to mean, to imply that the Chinese had prior knowledge of the Russian invasion of Ukraine and also that China endorses the invasion. He says China does nothing. China has no axe to grind. China has no geopolitical ambitions there. And he says US, on the other hand, if you see the statement, the recent statement of the US Secretary of Defense in Ukraine, he has said that our objective is to weaken Russia. And he says in this case, they will weaken Russia. They want to weaken Russia by fighting to the last Ukrainian, where Ukrainians are being used only as cannon fodder. Then he says they are not about to start forgetting China while they are confronting Russia. And then he gives his philosophical take on where the Western powers, particularly America, are coming from. Because he refers to America again and again. He says they'll fight to the last Ukrainian using them as cannon fodder, upsetting the global order, causing food shortages, unemployment, currency crisis, supply chain crisis, while at the same time sitting comfortably in another continent far, far away and raking in billions and billions and billions of dollars, not just from weapon sales, but also from oil and gas sales. So he says philosophically, the American formulation is not to forget China while confronting Russia, but actually to regard Eurasian continent as a new battlefield and focus on two theaters. One is Europe and second is Asia Pacific. Now he's very careful always to say Asia Pacific, not Indo-Pacific. He uses Indo-Pacific only once in quotes, and that's when he's being sarcastic and he's saying the Americans have come up with this divisive idea of Indo-Pacific. In fact, when he talks of the Indo-Pacific, he uses the adjective dangerous, and he says this is dangerous, this Indo-Pacific strategy. This is not to change China or the Chinese conduct as much as it is to change the strategic environment in which China operates. To this extent, and this is my view, to this extent, he may be putting it accurately, because the purpose of the Indo-Pacific strategy is to change the strategic environment in which China operates, because right now they are unchallenged in that region, and obviously the Chinese don't like that challenge emerging. And then he says, Americans are not trying to form exclusive groups against China. They are also exacerbating the Taiwan issue. This is nothing but NATO's eastward expansion, which has already had horrible consequences. This is not going to get worse. And this is throwing the world deeper into an abyss. Those are his exact words translated by his government. He says China is troublemaker, and the American effort to copy-paste his words, American effort to copy-paste Ukraine in the Asia-Pacific is not going to work. Then he lays down his five principles. These are Xi Jinping's five principles. It is being stated by Li Yucheng, but you know, this is a Chinese official position. So he lays down 5 points. Number one, reject any effort to replace international rules with house rules. All these are his words, house rules, that is American house rules, rules made by the Americans. Two, accept that all global security is indivisible, which means you can't have security of one block or security of the other, or one block versus the other. All security is indivisible. Obviously, China is the boss. Chinese sit on top of everything. I'm adding that. Number three, global security should be kept devoid of politics and ideological confrontation, and global security must not be divided into security blocks. That's a very bad thing. Now, what does he mean by ideological divisions? As I was reading this, I was wondering, what does he mean by ideological dividing lines? And I thought for a moment, he can't be saying communism, capitalism now, but he can't also be saying autocracy and democracy. But sure enough, he goes ahead and says exactly that. And he says, there is this confrontation is being built of democracy versus autocracy, which is obviously a bad thing. Then he says, number four, we have to be committed to opposing unilateral sanctions. It's a tool for hegemony and power politics. It adds fuel to the fire. Again, his words. And number five and last, it is important to stay committed to security and stability in the Asia-Pacific. That's very important for India. The fifth point, it is important to stay committed to security and stability in the Asia-Pacific and reject attempts to allow turmoil or war. And then he says, the peace in our region has been earned over time. This hasn't descended on our region automatically or as a charity. These are all his words. I don't have to do very much except to quote those. And he says, the efforts to create a global NATO is going to destabilize all this. And that amounts to interfere in our affairs. And he said that we don't lean on the side of making trouble. We lean on the side of spreading splendor. Again, his words. And then he says, where is this mindset in Europe coming from? And that's where he makes his deep side slashes. So he says, in Europe, you have people who use smartphones of the global age, but their mindsets are still frozen in the Cold War. And that's why their systems are today experiencing a downtime. Right? When I do this, it means his words. Their systems are now experiencing a downtime, and what they need to do, they need to upgrade their operating systems. Again, his words. Then he says 3 points, his 3 words of advice for them. Number one, you foster a shared perception on global community. Number two, uphold a shared principle of indivisible security. So he's repeating, he's highlighting some of his earlier five, but this is more directed at Europe. Third, follow a shared path of peaceful coexistence and avoid talking about autocracy, mudslinging, hegemony, and putting democracies versus autocracy. So you can also see where it's hurting the Chinese, where it's worrying the Chinese. And then, just in case you might be thinking the Chinese take everything too seriously, they don't have a sense of humor, they don't watch anything on TV that's fun, they watch the same things it seems that all of us do. So they watch, for example, House of Cards very carefully. So he quotes a line from the House of Cards. This is the Chinese vice foreign minister. He says there is a famous line in House of Cards, politics requires sacrifice, the sacrifice of others, of course, unquote. That, of course, is a reference to Ukrainians and to Europeans in general, but Ukrainians in particular. And he says, now look at people in Europe. They are all complaining about food shortages, energy crisis, refugees, unemployment, while the Americans, as I mentioned earlier, are raking in the billions. So he says what the Americans are right now doing is profiting from war, weakening Russia, spreading their hegemony, and all at the expense of Ukraine. So this is the Chinese view of the world right now. What are the messages? Every problem in the world is caused by the Americans. What's happening in Ukraine is not Putin's fault. It happened because of NATO's eastward expansion. Putin has been drawn into it, and Americans are now trying to fight him to weaken Russia to the last Ukrainian. In the process, Americans are benefiting. China is a force for the good. At the same time, you Americans and all of America's friends, Australia, Japan, India in particular, members of the Quad who are talking of Indo-Pacific, which he calls a troublesome concept, do not come and create trouble in Asia-Pacific, which is his understanding of any new alliances that change the current strategic balance in Indo-Pacific, which obviously suits China, which has China in a completely, totally preeminent position. Now, the two other things that we said we have read at the same time. One is Putin's statement. One is this interview that CIA chief has given to Ed Luce. Now, the standout point in that interview, and I'm sharing a link with you, you can read the entire text. The standout point is that he says that Putin has been stewing, his words, Putin has been stewing in this strange combination of complexes, victimhood, and also a sense of lost glory, and that he is in a perfect position to restore the Russian imperial glory. And that's why it's very difficult for him to pull back now. And that's why it was very difficult for him to avoid invading Ukraine, because he thinks he cannot restore Russia's old glory without subduing Ukraine first. And he says right now Putin is in a situation, that's his analysis, the CIA chief's analysis. He had met Putin last in October when he had gone visiting to Moscow. He says his own understanding is that Putin can't accept defeat and go back. And that is corroborated by Putin's speech today, where Putin says that Russian soldiers who are fighting in Ukraine are fighting for Russian territory, very important Russian territory, and they are fighting a war as patriotic and as nationalistic as what the Russians called, what the Soviets called, the Great Patriotic War. That is the Second World War. So he, if anything, has upped the ante. So read both of those, read the Chinese statement or Chinese agenda, and then you see where we are sitting in today's ever-shifting geostrategic realities. And that is the reason I said not just a week, even a weekend can be a very important time in geopolitics. Now, having said that, back to a pleasant thing that I promised you, Avinash Sable. So remember the name Naib Subedar Avinash Sable of 5th Battalion of Mahar Regiment of Indian Army. He's a farmer's child, a poor farmer's child from a village in Bid district, a very backward Bid, dry backward Bid district of Maharashtra. He came in from there, joined the army, served at Siachen. After that, joining the army athletics program, and has today broken record after record. The latest feat that he has had, which has got him in headlines, at least in some papers that bother about non-cricketing sport. Unfortunately, most papers and most channels don't care one bit, because track and field athletics is the mother and the father, grandmother and grandfather, nana, nani, dada, dadi of all sport, right? If you're not good at that, you can't be good at very much else. So he has broken a 30-year-old record in 5,000 meter run. 5,000 meters is long distance. On the shorter side of long distance and goes up to the marathon. So 5,000 meters, the record that was formed 30 years back by Bahadur Prasad had stood the test of time, unfortunately, because in all countries which are good with athletics, the records get broken very soon. But in India, that tells us the sad story of Indian track and field. Now, he's broken a 30-year-old record set by Bahadur Prasad. That record was set in 1992 of 13 minutes, 29.7 seconds. 29.70 seconds. Now, usually these records would be broken by one-tenth of a second or one-fifth of a second. But in this case, Avinash Sable has broken it by a clean 4 seconds. If anything, 4.05 seconds. So he has set a record. He was running at San Juan Capistrano in California at the second running tech meet. So it's not even some qualifying trials in India where you might say that some coach who wanted his board to do well could have fixed the timing. No, it's an international meet in California, and he's recorded a brilliant timing of 13 minutes 25.65 seconds compared to 13 minutes 29.70 seconds. So even more important, this is not a flash in the pan. And when I say flash in the pan, I know that somebody might say that I conjured up that metaphor just to suit myself right now, because the other area is Avinash Sable has now broken a 30-year-old national record in 5,000 meters. But originally, he's not a 5,000 meters runner. He's a 3,000 meters steeplechase runner. And in steeplechase, among the obstructions is also like a puddle of water, like a pan of water. And sometimes people jump into it or step into it. That's why I thought some of you who know athletics might say, is it flash in the pan? Is it deliberately chosen metaphor? But the fact is that he broke another very durable record in steeplechase. And that record had survived for 37 years. It was in 1981 that Gopal Saini, one of India's greatest athletes of all times, he had set the national steeplechase record of 8 minutes 29.88 seconds. This was in 1981. It had survived for 37 years until in 2018 at the 58th National Open Athletics in Bhubaneswar. Avinash Sable broke that record, and that record also he did not break by a microsecond or 1 second. He broke that record by a neat 11 seconds. And since then, he's broken it 7 times. He's broken his own record 7 times. And now he's running the same steeplechase 11 seconds faster than that earlier Gopal Saini record. 11 seconds is a lot of time in competitive athletics. So now he's doing at Tokyo Olympics, he did 8 minutes 18 seconds or 8 minutes precisely 8 minutes 18.12 seconds. Remember, Gopal Saini's original record was 8 minutes 29.88 seconds. So 11 seconds have been shaved off, and he's still getting better at this. So once again, join me in congratulating Avinash Sable, celebrating this moment. And you know what? What is the other thing I celebrated this time? We can also see a return of the Indian Armed Forces to athletics. Because for a long time, it looked like the Indian Armed Forces had lost their preeminence there. Now, it's not just Neeraj Chopra, who's from the army. It's also Avinash Sable, and there are many others. We've spoken about them. If you look at Tokyo Olympics, the Asiad before that, lots and lots more of Indian Armed Forces, including the Navy and the Air Force. People are now coming up in track and field, which is a beautiful thing to happen to India.